Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Have you all got your headphones on?
Yes, yes, definitely.
Well, check this out.
I'm Gary Lineker and you're listening to the Football Ramble.
Oh!
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to an evening with Gary Lineker. I mean the Football Ramble. James or Jim is here.
I am.
Pete is here.
Hello.
And Lukey is here.
Right.
Gentlemen, and this is a question from Toninho, an email that came in. Who is your favourite unsung hero?
Who are you looking at first, Marcus? Have you got any preference?
Shall I go first?
Go on,
go first.
Peter Beardsley for England.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Good.
Because... our man who introduced the show there, Gary Lineker, would often take the plaudits, and rightfully so, he scored a lot of goals. But Beardsley, without Beardsley, the assists that he provided...
Beardsley was very industrious. Mm. I think it does depend on how you bracket someone as an unsung hero, because you're very unlikely to forget who Beardsley is or forget his role in the team,
absolutely.
I think.
Okay.
For me, an unsung hero would arguably be someone like Dunga. Dunga,
well, okay,
would go about his business in front of the back four and just let other players play.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
But I think Dunga, Didier Deschamps, players like that are renowned for doing that.
You know, so it always becomes full circle.
Yeah, it's a tough. Okay. It's actually a strangely tough question.
At the top level of football, it's difficult to be
full stop.
Absolutely. It's like Claude Makélélé is always noted as being underrated. He's the most rated underrated player in the history of football.
Tim Lovejoy. Right. Well, Toninho, the guy who emailed in, he's said Dennis Bergkamp's hardly an unsung hero. Dennis Irwin.
Yeah, that's not a bad shout. Yeah. I mean, I would accept.
Yeah, but from what you're saying, look, you do remember Dennis Irwin. You see, from my point of view, is when England would win back in the day, it would often be, oh, Lineker scored a hat trick. Lineker. And they forget that the vital contribution that Beardsley brought to the team.
Yeah, no,
that's the kind of angle that I'm coming at it with.
I mean, obviously, I'm going to remember who Dennis Irwin is.
Well, yeah.
But what I'm saying is, when people... Put it this way, if you're listing the sort of team that won, the double for United in 93 or whatever it is, 94, and you had to list the first 11, then you may forget Irwin, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You may forget, someone like Henning Berg,
Ronnie
Johnson. Later on, or Ronnie Johnson. Yeah, that's for me, that's what an unsung hero is.
Okay.
And I know, I take Jimbo's point about the sort of underrated, rated player, but Dunga, for me... would be the very embodiment of...
I think Dunga's a good one, an unsung hero. You could win the points with that, depending on what the other boys say.
Okay. I don't know if this one counts, but I think you got to look at the context. In the defence this man was playing in, I think, considering the sort of giant he was playing alongside and the giant he was in front of, that Steve Bold deserves a good shout. Steve Bold was a massive player.
He's a forgotten man, really.
Scored some goals in the Cup Winners' Cup, on the way to the...
Fantastic defender.
He's not been in the public eye quite so much since
perhaps.
He's retired.
Maybe.
Yeah,
I think so. Oh, I think, yeah, Steve
Because he was an absolute rock at the back. He didn't get the credit he deserved purely because Adams was,
But that back four is quite heralded, though, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was like a back six once you put Keown and, to a lesser extent, Linegan in it as well.
And the linesman.
Yeah. Good shout.
Thank you.
Well, he's the real unsung hero, Peter.
Well, I'm usually criticised for using Newcastle players unduly, but I don't
always.
Think I've done it for a couple of weeks.
That's not true.
Yeah, I don't think you've done it since we last recorded.
Yeah, I was going to say, so you are correct saying a couple of weeks, actually, yeah.
Steve Watson. he was industrious.
I'm sorry, he never did anything.
Well, no, he played...
You're unsinging him now. Hear him out.
Yeah, sorry.
That's not the Steve Watson I played with at Farnborough College of Technology, incidentally.
He's won every shirt from 2 till 11 in the promotion season under
Adidas. Really?
Yeah, he wore every single shirt. And he was just...
Wait, the one game?
At the same time, look at this!
He's a big lad.
But no, he was an incredible... He was just such an industrious sort of... He would just fit into any... He just could do a job anywhere. Yeah. And he did. He played a lot of matches in every sort of... he played, like, behind the striker. He played...
He would get, like, Clubman of the Year, like, most improved.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, he was just a fantastic sort of player that fitted in everywhere. And he got a lot of appearances.
Laura laughs.
Yeah, I'm going to give you the points there, Pete.
Oh, that's
heartfelt. He's, plea for that, I'm going to give it.
He practically got his knees and begged for the point.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't won. You've just bowed down to mawkish sentimentality.
Yeah. He's yet to him. I was actually going to say Nicky Butt until I realised that Pele actually gave him player of the century or whatever it was. So I thought, no, he is quite sung.
Well, cheers, Toninho.
Yeah.
Toninho, yeah.
Yeah, so look like a little Tony.
Yeah. Little Tony, yeah. Mm.
Well, let's move straight on to the signings and all the craziness that's been happening in the world of football, which is where we tend to operate.
Yeah.
Michael Owen's the big one.
Mm. Yeah, that's out of left field, that was.
I didn't see that coming.
He can't believe his luck, can he?
I know.
Do you reckon he was like, when he was doing this brochure, he was like, make sure Fergie gets this, honestly.
Yeah.
I don't care who you send it out to, just make sure Ferguson gets it. And it's obviously worked.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Ferguson's probably read it on the internet. I'm sure these people are going, yeah, we'll send it to him, Michael. We'll send it to... Yeah. Just stick it in the post of Phil Brown and tell him you sent it to Ferguson, right?
Yeah. Do you reckon... I'd love to know what the reaction was immediately when Ferguson rang up.
Yeah, because he rang him up and he said, do you want to meet for breakfast tomorrow? And then he told him over breakfast. So Michael Owen must have been thinking, nah.
Yeah, nah. He must just want breakfast. Surely not going to ask him to play for Man United.
If all else fails, we're going to get a free breakfast. Yeah. I can't lose.
Yeah. Maybe Owen was thinking, is he going to start asking me about my horses?
Mm. Yeah, he may have thought that was what the situation was.
Because
yeah.
He's been out of that game for a while, Alex Ferguson.
Yeah.
But let's not go there.
No.
No, I think it's a great move. I mean, he has taken a big...
Do you honestly think it's a good sign, dude?
No, I think it's a great move for Owen.
Oh, of course.
I think, given the circumstances, it's a reasonable punt for Man United as well.
I think so.
They're not paying the
massive
amount.
They can't really lose, can they?
No transfer fee. I mean, sticking one over on Liverpool, however much they deny that's any sort of motivation, Ferguson is going to love that if it comes off. Yeah. If he scores against them, could you imagine?
Oh, yeah.
What's the sort of money situation?
It's 50 grand a week.
Is it 50 grand a week?
I thought it was
less than that with sort of pay as you play on the
I was expecting to learn about that if he plays and scores here and there and stuff.
If he scores a hat trick every game, then he's on 50 grand a week.
But I mean, bear in mind, I read a really good point about Owen a while ago. He hasn't had a pre-season in years because of his injuries and this, that and the other. Well, mainly exclusively his injuries. Yeah. But
his season pre-season.
Now he's got some time to get a decent sort of preparation in.
He's only 29.
Yeah. Exactly.
He's still a good player.
There's no better place for him, is it? I wrote a piece for Football 365 recently about how I thought Owen was outdated in terms of what
an
people,
anachronism.
Yeah, he is, because what people expect from strikers now is so much more. There's not really a place for poachers now.
No.
So I'm going to be made to look like a massive twat if he scores loads of goals. I think what will happen is, and it's been said by other people sort of more learned than me, is that he'll probably become a new sort of Solskjaer.
I think that's the intention.
Yeah, I think
and if you're fighting a battle and trying to win competitions all over the place, Champions League, League Cup, FA Cup, Premier League, which United are, then you can never have too many of those sort of goal
getters. That's right.
No. I mean, the reason I don't know is whether he's a good goal scorer or not is simply because like you say, Jimbo, he's not really been injury free for a while.
No, it's four seasons, isn't it, since he came back from Madrid. And
I mean, they have just signed Gabriel Obertan.
So a lot of people are reacting to that as quite a strange signing, because apparently he's really sort of stalled. He looked like he was going to be a very, very good player, and he's just kind of stood still for a while. But Bordeaux are, you know, they don't seem that sad to see him go.
I don't know too much about him, to be honest. I know he's Lorient for a
while. Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, he is another forward as well.
Yeah. Okay.
But, I mean, they have just
lost... One for the future, probably.
Well, they have just lost Ronaldo and Tevez.
Yeah.
I think it's quite interesting that they're obviously not trying to replace Ronaldo with, like, this one big superstar.
Yeah.
Ferguson's very good at sort of mutating Man United to play in different ways.
Absolutely.
He's very obviously doing that again now.
They've dealt with losing players as big, maybe not quite as big as Ronaldo, but big players in the past.
Yeah, and
they've always
dealt with it again.
Yeah, I think so. And also, don't forget
Paul Ince, for example.
Well, there's just one example.
Yeah. Jordi Cruyff.
Yeah, yeah.
Have they got over that though?
I'll tell you, Ferguson says the player that they've missed the most and the biggest mistake he made was letting Jaap Stam go.
Yeah, definitely.
But you know, United obviously recently famously changed their transfer policy, didn't they? So they're going to be signing a lot of young players now. They won't be signing players over a certain age,
26,
which sort of almost rules out Ribery anyway.
Yeah, well, I don't think they're going in for Ribery, but it'd be interesting to see what happens there. On paper, it's going to be a very tight season if the squads sort of stay as they are.
I hope so.
But you say they're not going in for Ribery. Everyone else is, though.
Yeah.
Hasn't he said Real Madrid or nothing?
I don't know. By the time this comes out, he could have gone
someone
to three different clubs.
Someone who said that he said Real Madrid or nothing. Probably someone from Real Madrid.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure I read a direct quote from him.
Yeah, I know. But, still.
No, but then he came out and said, no, I'm not going anywhere. And then you hear these quotes. It just...
Yeah, fair enough. We don't know. It's all conjecture.
But they've got Benzema.
And they've got Raul Albiol from Valencia as well, which is a really good signing.
That is a good signing.
They're building some side, they are.
They really are.
If they can get the balance right and Pellegrino can stay on top of it, it's going to be they're going to be some side this season.
So but where does your man from Valencia play?
He's a defender.
I was going to say, because that... they're doing the same old, aren't they?
Yeah, well, it's Perez,
but it is. Yeah, you're right.
It's a fantastic forward line that they're going to have. I mean, if they can add Ribery to that as well. I mean, this Gonzalo Higuain, I know I'm always singing his praises, but he's a really, really good player as well. I'm sure Raul's going to sort of pick himself, regardless of what happens. It's going to be really interesting to see how they compete with Barcelona, because you know, the beauty of Barcelona is the way they gel and the way their players rotate and they let the ball do the work.
It's not
and
a team of superstars, is it?
No.
Even though it's got superstars in its team, they're very much a team of aesthetic.
Yes. You know? But I mean, as we've said before, Kaká and Ronaldo are both players you build a team around.
That's
but
right.
Now that they're both in there, it's going to be interesting to see what Madrid do. Obviously, Pellegrini knows what he's doing, so it's going to be potentially phenomenal there.
I would love it, though, when the team's in the El Clasico and Barca just hammer them again.
Yeah.
That would be
I imagine it.
But the thing is it really does sort of start to look like what we were talking about a while ago, which was, is it a genuine power shift from English football's dominance into Spain?
Yeah.
It would be surprising. I mean, we're presuming a lot of things. We're presuming that it all goes well, and as we all know, it has gone wrong with Real Madrid before. If they get it right, it could be a Barcelona Real Madrid Champions League final.
I think the thing with sort of the English dominance at the moment is that it's four teams. I mean, Arsenal even managed to get to the semi-final, whereas in Spain it's always going to be Barcelona and Real Madrid. You've got to look at those sort of other teams going for the sort of third and fourth spot to see if it will shift like that. I mean, it'd be interesting to see it a little bit more balanced. But something else I was going to say about Real Madrid is you've got to look at the players they're sort of looking to offload. There's like Wesley Schneider in there, like Rafael van der Vaart, Mahamadou Diarra. He's phenomenal.
All the Dutch players basically, and Diarra.
So Diarra is exactly what Arsenal need, and why that link hasn't been made, I don't know. I know he's been injured, but he's just exactly what they need. Apparently they're willing to let him go. Buy him!
Yeah,
exactly. Well, maybe Manchester City will.
Yeah, why not?
Because Gary Cook's trying to get his hands on Samuel Eto'o.
Who's have Man City actually signed anyone at all?
They've signed Roque Santa Cruz, that's gone through.
Yeah, of course,
And they're after... I heard Bellamy's on his way.
Yeah, I heard.
Yeah, I was surprised. He's always on his way.
Yeah.
Who's he pissed off now?
Yeah, exactly.
Himself.
And Chelsea have signed Yuri Zhirkov as well.
Yeah, that's a potentially great sign.
I know he's a good player, but it's a lot of money, isn't it?
Yeah. I think transfer fees and the size of them are becoming less and less sort of relevant because they've been just sort of bent out of all kinds of recognisable shape by Real Madrid this summer. I mean, Benitez is talking about $45 million for Xabi Alonso. I mean, obviously that's to scare off players.
It's supply and demand, isn't it? If they want them that much and they've got the money, we've seen that happen before, haven't we?
Yeah, I know, but it's every time that happens, it inflates the market a little bit more.
I think you're right, James. I think the fact is they've paid around £80 million for one player, around £56 million for another. Benitez is like, well, you're not going to get my man for £20 million.
No, absolutely, Glenn Johnson has gone for £17 million. And no disrespect to the toilet seat stealing twat, but you know,
he's a good player.
He is a good player, but £17 million.
He's not worth that much money.
No, but
it's as simple as
you know. That's how inflated the transfer market has got now.
I think you boys if you're thinking about it that way, you're absolutely right. And obviously it's silly money and it has been for a very long time. But if Benitez will argue that if that's the only player he needs and they win the Premier League next season for the first time in 20 years or whatever it is, then it's worth every penny, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's speculating what you're going to get in return.
I see what you mean. But yeah.
But it's a dangerous game, isn't it?
Yeah.
I would argue that Glenn Johnson was the best right back in the Premier League last season. So if that's the best league in the world, and he's arguably the best right back in the best league in the world, for whatever they say or whatever they think, then he's got to be worth that. That's just a devil's advocate.
I guess that's the sort of logic. But we've had it so many times.
Well, with Liverpool, we've had it so many times, or we just need one or two more players. You know, we'll have to wait and see, won't we?
It would be interesting because I mean they were very good last season. Liverpool. It'd be interesting to see if they can sort of stick amongst it.
I mean, they took it to pretty much, arguably, the last two weekends of the season, which is great.
Absolutely. I don't think Manchester City are going to get John Terry, though.
No.
Even if they do offer him, you know, royalty.
I'll tell you what, I'm not sure if I completely agree with that.
Really?
No.
Genuinely.
They've not said out, this week they've not come out and denied...
Well, there's apparently reports that John Terry's pissed off about that, isn't there? I don't know if... read those too, but apparently he's upset that no one's been on the phone to him, but, you know, it's all...
Well, I've heard that John Terry is seriously...
stupid.
I can confirm that.
Well, he's dad of the year. Yeah. All right. It wouldn't be my choice in a month of Sundays, but he got it.
Yeah. That's the biggest award he's ever
won. See, my dad is a womaniser.
And I know
my dad pisses in a toilet. I'm going to put my dad, Campbell, above John Terry's
dad of the
year.
Only one of those is true, by the way. Only one of those is true.
Yeah. I was about to say, I wouldn't have nominated him for dad of the year because I know why he shouldn't have won it, but I wasn't going to. But you've gone and said, so well done, James.
I'm not saying it's going to go. I'm not saying, oh, you've heard it here first, because I genuinely don't know. But all I'm saying is I wouldn't be falling over in shock if he moved. That's what I'm saying. Because he's not come out straight away and said anything.
But is this because of the money?
It's because of the money, and because he's looking probably for his last big contract, and it's the only chance he's going to get any sort of move if he ever wanted it. And it's not been categorical. I mean, Chelsea sort of didn't say anything for a while, but then they said something. Yeah. And to me, the silence from Terry, I know he's on holiday or whatever, the silence from him sort of made me think, I don't know, maybe.
I mean, this summer we've seen so many crazy transfers happen that it wouldn't even be that weird now.
I don't think it'd happen this summer, though. I think Christmas, maybe. Really mess it all up.
What? Where's he gone?
Dear, oh dear. Paul Ince has gone back to MK Dons. That's where he's gone.
Was his towel between his legs? Can we confirm that?
Well, no, he said he's got nothing to prove. So, you've got to respect the self-titled governor, haven't you?
Exactly. Oh, dear.
Nothing to prove but my brilliance.
The old piece of paper with shoot written on it.
I brought it. Don't worry, lads, I brought it.
Oh, wait, sit down, boys. Half time, sit down. You're going to like this.
This is Premier League quality.
Everyone listen. Everyone be quiet. Stop talking. Listen. Fucking shoot! Yeah. That's basically what it
is. Guys. Goal! Yeah, he's gone back there, so MK Dons must be over the moon. To be fair, he did a good job at MK Dons, it has to be said. He didn't fare so well with Blackburn.
And Di Matteo, who has gone to West Brom.
He has gone to West Brom.
Which is cracking, because he's gone about it the right way.
Yeah, he has gone at the right way. West Brom, and I'm glad West Brom, well, I think Di Matteo will do well. He's shown that he's decent so far, and I'm pleased they've got someone who's potentially decent. I keep saying decent, sorry. I'm pleased to see they've got someone potentially good to take over from Tony Mowbray. You know, I think it was a shame for them, him going to Celtic.
You do get
understandable.
These, of course, I was going to say, you do get these things where it's a shame, but a lot of the time it's nice to see. Clubs do say, well, you know, I can't really stand in their way. They want to go and do something.
Well, he used to play for Celtic. And he's not going to get... a massive club, Champions League football, you can't blame him.
What other Champions League football club is he ever going to... with respect to him at the moment, is he going to be able to manage? Not many.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, not any, probably.
Yeah, I mean, it's... It's like you say, it's good to see when sort of managers do sort of start off lower down, even if it is just the Championship, which is, you know, obviously only one division down. But, you know, I think Alan Shearer deserves praise for that.
He just deserves praise. We all agree on that. Hang
on, Pete's saying something.
Oh, sorry, Pete.
I think he's holding out, isn't he? I think it would be stupid to come back now when it's all up in the air and there's no guarantees. He needs a bit of money behind him.
Do you know what I think it's like, Pete? I think it's in a Bond film when James Bond's trying to think about how he can get out of a hopeless situation.
I think it's more like
a bit more time. How am I going to get out of this?
I think it's more like Carry On Football.
Yeah, yeah. Every time he walks into a room, it's like.
It's weird. What's going on at Newcastle? It's just...
The players are talking about leaving. Yeah. So they're handing transfer requests unless Alan Shearer is unveiled.
There's been, like, mutinies before. It's, I think that in the 80s there was a big player mutiny, and it was, like, through, like, really journeyman midfielders having a pop.
Presumably it's not the same players now.
It's Stephen Taylor, I think, is upset, and...
The song, was it?
I think the song's going to move anyway, to be honest, because he's been excellent all season.
Might be lazy, saying Joey Barton.
Yeah. Well, does he care enough about anything?
Joe Barton probably hasn't even turned up the pre-season to worry about that.
I think he even knows they've gone down.
A guy knows a Newcastle season ticket holder up there. He works in one of the local gyms where often the players come in and use all the equipment. And it was they were doing pre-season and they were doing some training thing in there. And they were all in the pool and doing lengths and one thing and another. And he was in the jacuzzi, my mate. And Joey Barton got out the pool where they were all swimming, going up and down, and just popped in the jacuzzi. And he kind of looked at him and was like, shouldn't you be there with all the others? And he was just like, nah, I can't be bothered. As soon as Caldwell and some of the other training staff turned up, Joe Barton immediately popped out straight to the jacuzzi, banged straight in the swimming pool and started doing lengths and stuff.
God, that's exactly how I imagine
a naughty schoolboy.
Yeah, but surely when they walked in, they'd see, hang on, Joey Barton's obviously cold. Yeah. He's just come out of the jacuzzi and into the swimming pool.
Yeah. He's smoking a cigarette. He's stabbing out on swimmers in the fast lane as he goes by.
He's drowning a baby.
Yeah. He's coming over with a bag full of old kittens, unwanted like Christmas pets. He's just drowning them in the pool for a fiver.
God, he's found a family of dodos. Oh, he's stamping on them.
Did you see Ronaldo being unveiled at Real Madrid?
Mental.
That was quite something. It's like a bloody U2 concert,
God,
wasn't it?
I mean, stage.
Incredible. Do you think that's what he's been promised before every game? Yeah, so. What we'll do before every game, we'll put that catwalk up. You can walk up and down.
It was, I've never don't even have to play if you want.
I've never seen anything like it.
So, did you see what happened at the end?
Well, go on.
The pitch invasion.
I never saw it, I heard about it.
It's ridiculous. It was real chaos. One guy got up to Ronaldo and he hugged him and he looked delighted and stuff like that, but it quickly turned violent. It was just... in terms of the security, just trying to control people.
So you meant the guy was hugging him exactly. Yeah. Actually, you
Ronaldo
are a dislikeable character.
But I'm not being funny. If Pompey signed...
You can't compare.
Well, I'm just saying, why are people reacting like that?
All right, okay.
I mean, I'm not saying we're as big a club as Real Madrid, but if Pompey signed, you know, one of my favourite players of all time, I wouldn't be running onto the pitch and, like, do you know what I mean? It which wouldn't happen.
TGA.
Obvious.
Still good, though.
I don't like the fact that he's wearing number 9.
No, he's CR7 to me.
Yeah,
He's been saying that he's obsessed with the referees. He's sort of saying they're very soft. They're very soft in Spain, these referees.
Was he sort of cuddling one at the time?
Didn't he also say that he's worth more than 80 million? It's like he's pissed off about it.
I've been undervalued.
Yeah, he is like a real pantomime villain.
He's a massive twat, isn't he? Fair to say.
Have you heard where his debut might be?
No.
It could be in a suburb of Dublin.
Of course, yes.
Because Real Madrid this month are off to play Shamrock Rovers.
What, pre-season? In a bizarre move.
Well, it's not exactly a La Liga match, is it?
Oh, I don't know, Marcus.
Well, you should by now.
Oh, Sepp Blatter, he's gone mental again.
Do you mean he's woken up for the day?
Real Madrid aren't the biggest team playing there this month.
Is it Newcastle as well, yeah?
Saturday, are they? Yeah. That's an annual thing, though, isn't it?
Yeah. It's that league game. Have some of that, come on.
Boom! Yes. That's a high five. Shamrock are... hosting Real Madrid. They've got 3,500 is the capacity, but it will be boosted to 10,000 with some temporary seating.
Okay.
But the Shamrock Rovers chairman, Jonathan Roche, is giving it the big one. I think it's fair
He's
to
loving
say.
It.
He is.
Well, he said that there are a lot of similarities between Real Madrid and Shamrock Rovers. If I'm not being arrogant. You are.
you're not being arrogant, you're making things up.
Just being completely delusional.
Yeah. The letter R is prominent in both of these.
Yeah. We're both members' clubs, owned by the fans. So an immediate similarity I think.
Yeah. Both your balls on a green pitch.
Yeah. Obviously they're much bigger, but we're both the biggest club in our respective countries.
Possibly true, yes.
Possibly true. Yeah. I mean, Barcelona might be bigger than Madrid. Yeah. But Shamrock are definitely the biggest club in Ireland. So, if anything, they've got one over Madrid there.
Yeah.
We're used to playing European teams at the top level. I'd like to question that. We haven't done it in 20 years, but this is a bit of us getting back up there. Maybe it's big for Real Madrid too.
I like this guy, Jonathan.
Yeah, I like him
a
lot.
He's funny.
A sober interview might have been more accurate.
Oh, stereotypes. Yeah. Well, because he's Irish.
Is he, though?
Don't know.
Yeah. So, there you go. Shamrock Rovers, we wish you all the best. Another man who's arrived in a country with massive expectation and elevated status is Darius Vassell.
Apparently.
Is he actually signed for that team?
I don't know. Is it Ankaragücü?
Ankaragücü, yeah.
I think they're
cool. We'll go for that. Yeah. Darius Vassell, there's talk of him going to Turkey. Yeah. We're not sure if he's actually been done yet or not,
no,
so we can't say.
No, yeah, but he's definitely gone there, hasn't he, for a trial.
Yeah, it was a massive,
huge. There was
huge
a banner saying, we are more than a club, you are more than a player. He's definitely just a player.
Yeah.
I would go as far as to say.
I think you've seen a video of that game he had good for England once. Yeah. When he came
against
off
Turkey, when he scored it? Against Turkey, yeah. He is ridiculously quick, Vassell.
Yeah, but he can't do anything else.
When all is said and done, he's got pace.
He's got pace, and you can't buy that. Well, you can buy that, they have.
We haven't seen him for a while, though. Maybe he's lost that. He's getting on now.
It's an odd one.
Can I be controversial slightly? So I don't
Please.
Think he's a very good player.
Well, you can be controversial slightly. Go ahead. What is it you were going to say?
He's not a very good player.
All right.
Yeah, he's not. He's played at a good level though, international.
I think he was one of those players that had a lot of promise, and he sort of got drafted into the England squad for a bit. And to be fair, he wasn't terrible, but now he's almost... I hate to say he's been found out, but he's not really progressed.
Well, he's been a bit part player for such a long time.
Yeah, for a couple of different clubs as well.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, I mean, you know, Turkish league's obviously not as good a standard. It's not.
But this side he's going to aren't obviously one of the big Turkish clubs either.
Yeah.
No, it's true. Yeah.
So I think I'm not surprised if they're really happy to see a former Premiership... Well... I suppose you could say current if they haven't signed him yet.
Yeah.
Premiership player come along and it will give them exposure as well.
Well, the Premier League's got so much exposure.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's almost like a badge of honour in itself that you've played in the Premier League probably to a lot of other, without sounding sort of arrogant about it, because we all know that it's overhyped and stuff. But if you're coming from a Premier League club, I mean, and you're going to a Turkish club, they probably think, yeah, brilliant.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that an English player has gone out there. I definitely will. Do you think it's maybe something to do with these new tax laws?
Oh, yeah. But Matt Derbyshire went there, didn't he? I don't think that was that.
Fair play to Matt Derbyshire.
Yeah. Well, he's on a full-time...
Well, Matt Derbyshire, full-time. I think that's a different kettle of fish there, because Matt Derbyshire, he's only 23, and he has moved to Olympiakos, who are one of the big sides in Greece.
Yeah.
Permanent.
And because he went out on a six-month loan deal back in January, and he scored 11 goals since he's been there. And won the Greek Cup with them, and
scored two in the final, didn't he?
This is one of this is meant to be one of the best games in kind of Greek Cup history. Yeah, he played a massive role there. They were 2-0 down, and Derbyshire was brought on at half time. And 3 minutes after coming on, he scored. And then they got it back to 2-0. Well, this is with AEK Athens, who are massive rivals, obviously, the big sides in Greece. And then AEK Athens scored what seemed to be the winning goal in stoppage time. However, Derbyshire popped up with the last touch of the game, pretty much, to in the 6th minute of injury time to make it 3-3.
Yeah.
And then it went to penalties, and Olympiakos won 15-14 on penalties.
That's cracking.
And Derbyshire was man of the match.
Brilliant.
I love it. He's not only is he's enjoying his football, he's playing first team football, he's scoring goals. Yeah. He always looks a good player.
Loved by the fans already.
He's winning things as well. It's brilliant.
Yeah. He's like the darling of Greek football.
Good on him. I'd love to see him get an England call up at some point down the line. Just as a sort of message to other players. Like, you know, if you do well elsewhere, you'll get a shot.
Done, James. Well, at least
he looks a good player in the Premier League.
He did look a decent player, yeah. So, yeah, no, he's there. We have an Englishman playing abroad. I think
he's not
he's not in the EMAS Hall of Fame, but you carry on, Matty.
You never know.
You know what I mean? You've began the walk.
If we're still doing this show 15 years, you very well won't be in it.
You can achieve anything.
Yeah.
Exactly. But sticking with English players abroad, Glenn Hoddle's Academy has been in the news recently. And it's we talked about this academy. He's got it. It's based in Spain, and the main objective of this academy is to get former Premier League and Football League championship scholars back into professional football after they've been released by their clubs. And I think if I remember correctly, it's about a 6-week kind of program. That's the main aim of it. You know, they come in and they try and just really work on the ball skills and do all the back to basics. You know, and Hoddle said the improvement is incredible. You know, and this lad Akichi Anya from Oxfordshire, he just got a move to Sevilla.
That's phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, he's 20 and he's 21, which is reasonably getting on for late in the day for a footballer.
He was
a winger. And
how does that happen?
Well, this is how
he's converted him into a striker, Hoddle, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Well, again, I mean, Hoddle is tactically good. You know, he's tactically sound. Sorry, and he said, as you say, look, he was a pacey winger, but they saw something. They switched him to centre forward, and he's. He's rejuvenated. But here's a guy who's played, you know, for Wickham. He's playing at a decent level of professional football. He's 21. Hoddle suddenly changed position, and now he's playing for a top La Liga club.
Makes
or he's been signed. He's been signed by a top La Liga club.
How many players have fallen through the cracks? You know what I mean?
It's incredible.
Yeah. He ended the season in Northampton, from Northampton to where he is now.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. We had an email from Taylor. He's actually talked about this, and what he said is what he'd be interested to know is if that's the future of academies, so privately owned academies, why ex-pros become the sort of main producers of young players, because they see other things in players that maybe other people don't see.
Yeah.
So you never know. I mean, that could be a situation. I mean, this could be the first of many. The floodgates could open.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be fantastic. You could have a lot of ex-players that are great coaches in their own right without actually being attached to a club.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, it's a great breeding ground for actual sort of new coaches as well. It'd be brilliant for everybody.
I think also, as it is based in Spain, this academy, you know, if you're a youngster, you've been effectively kicked out of the game, you've got an ex-player, a big ex-player like Hoddle, saying, well, come to southern Spain, you know, a bit of football and sunshine, pal. They'd love that.
Yeah.
And immediately they're abroad, and the thought of assigning for a foreign club isn't so foreign.
Yeah, you're sort of breaking yourself in a little bit easier.
Exactly.
Right?
I think it's a fantastic thing.
Do you think he looks at them and he thinks, you know, I see something in that kid that not a lot of other people do, that he was definitely good in another life. I'm going to give him a shot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're going to go down to South America because we like to.
Woo!
The Argentine Clausura Championship has had a storming end to the season. Vélez versus Huracán was the final game there, and it was between these sides for the championship. Vélez needed to win. Huracán needed a draw. Vélez won it 1-0.
It would have been the first time Huracán won it for ages as well.
They just seem to always slip up at the final hurdle.
Yeah.
It's such a shame, really. But it was a huge game, and in the 19th minute the play was the referee had to stop play because giant hailstones were pelting down on the pitch and sent the players running for cover. So even the
I thought you were going to say giant haystacks.
The way you
giant
said
haystacks
that,
waded onto the pitch.
The way you said the giant hailstones, I thought you sort of meant people who brought hailstones with them.
sorry.
It blatantly came from the clouds, though, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well,
blatantly came from the clouds. Yeah.
Even the weather was playing its part.
Yeah.
Weather's
looked down and thought, I'm having some of that.
Yeah.
It's dramatic. I want to be involved.
How can I make this more mental? Well, yeah. I'm weather. That's pretty weird.
I'll do what I want.
So they were they had to stop play for about 20 minutes or something.
It's like 20 minutes of added time in the first half injury time.
Yeah,
so,
it was absolutely ridiculous.
And then
in the second half there was a mass brawl between the players and anyone else who fancied it for about, that was about 10 minutes. Some granny came out who ran on the pitch on a Vélez top and started leading the fans
in my head. This happens every game in South America. Yeah. I know it probably doesn't, but in my head there's fights every game.
I know all this because I was supplied information from our mate Rupert from southamericanfootball.co.uk, who we often mention on the show, but it is a really good website and it gives you a lot of all this kind of marvellous stuff. This probably does happen every week down there. The fans were trying to scale the 20-foot fence that they still persist with down there, those kind of fencing.
What are they trying to do? Get on the pitch and score themselves? How's it going to help?
It's a classic example of those things you've not really thought it through. Yeah. You just think it would be a good idea. When you get there, you don't know what you're going to do.
Yeah, well, I'm on a fence now. Oh, I'm over.
It's like moths near lights. I like football. I want to get closer to football. Yeah. As close as I can get to football.
Yeah,
exactly.
Cracking.
Yeah, but it's like, and again, South America is shocking for this. If there's a massive big traffic jam, the guy 17 cars back will go, well, I know.
Yeah. How can I make this a little bit more sort of annoying and tense?
Yeah.
Really loud noise? Like a really invasive.
How can I make this less organised?
Well, if I can just finish off by saying that as they were trying to scale the 20-foot fence, the local fire brigade had a good idea themselves.
So were they there? Everyone's having good ideas, aren't they?
Yeah.
Granny's singing.
It's like a constant brainstorming session out there. But they started to hose them down. Trying to shoot them off.
We're not talking like a garden hose, are we? We're talking about a really heavy...
Oh, you're talking about the proper ones. The proper ones. The long and short of it is, people, I don't know why we started talking about this, but we did, and that is Argentinian football.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah,
absolutely brilliant. Love it. And it is worth noting that the Copa Libertadores final is underway, not currently, as in the first leg has been played. Estudiantes, Cruzeiro 0-0. And Juan Sebastian Verón plays for Estudiantes.
I like that it's two-legged.
Do you?
Yes, it's so
a bit different. Old school.
UEFA Cup used to be that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Last show, we mentioned that we were going up to Birmingham for a six-a-side tournament, which was a Football 365 one for all the guys on the forums and so on. There was a team from Southampton, Cardiff, Sheffield, quite a few
local
teams.
There was a drunk team, wasn't there?
There was a drunk team from London, that wasn't us. There was quite a few teams from Birmingham. There were 12 teams in total.
Standard was difficult. We tried our best.
So we had 11 games. We had eight of us with eight players.
I banged my finger on a football, didn't I?
He did. On a football. A moving one.
Blood, sweat and tears, wasn't it, Jimbo?
Yeah. Exactly. Worth to say that I think we were definitely the best kitted outside, thanks to fitnessbox.co.uk. Yeah.
That was my nickname on the field as well, Fitnessbox.
Was it?
Yeah. Pete the Fitnessbox.
Shitbox.
No, to be honest, how good were those... I'm not just saying this, because... But the kits, man. Usually,
we look the best.
No, but usually, though, usually the football kits can be a little bit warm. They'd be a little hot.
Especially amateur ones. They're long, they're misshapen. Yeah, I enjoy that.
They were magnificent. Absolutely amazing. So thank you very much once again to Fitness Box.
Is it fair to say we were also magnificent on the pitch, Mark?
Well, we played 11 matches, ladies and gentlemen. We lost one. That was disappointing. We drew two. Slightly disappointing. We won eight. Which, all in all, was enough to see us win the whole bloody thing.
Get in!
Ramble Force! Taking the trophy back down the bloody M40.
Leaving it in Matt Riley's car.
We left the trophy. We'll get it back, though.
Thanks to the other boys who played with us. Alex, magnificent tackler of the ball.
Yeah.
Paul, great shooter of the ball.
Yeah.
Matt Riley, great runner-offer of the
Matt
ball.
Matt Riley's all action.
He's all action. And Rupert, who we mentioned from the South American football.
Yeah. Scored an absolute cracker.
At the risk of this only being relevant to a very select amount of listeners, we won. It was great. We had a good day out. Thanks to everyone who organised it. Email time.
And so it is.
Yeah.
Right, boys, what emails do we have? Hit me with them, and the listeners. And yourselves.
Shall I go first, then?
Go on, then.
Hello, Ramblers.
Hello.
Avid listener of the show here since the days of Chrissy Apples. Yeah?
Blimey.
Back in the day. The good old days. But he said he's usually forced to listen in six-month segments when he's on holidays. He doesn't commute into work. Anyway, he's wondering... I don't know why he's told us that, but
is he on a sabbatical every now and then?
Possibly.
Okay.
Anyway, he was wondering what sort of football-type games you used to play as kids. I used to write down 16 team names on a bit of card and did my own FA Cup style draw, then play out each of the matches by rolling a dice for each team, acting it out in the garden with my mate, or playing it via Sabutio against my sister until she trod on my goalkeeper.
Pete, have you sent this in?
That is incredible.
For your information, Belgium won the 1991 Dice World Cup with Enzo Schifo scoring 29 goals in the tournament, as he was the only Belgian I knew.
You're a good player as well.
But he says you won't have heard of this tournament because it was pre-Richard Keys and therefore didn't actually happen. And in the history of the entire tournament, there's never been a goalless draw. Thanks for now. Keep up the good work. Matt in Walsall. Thanks, Matt.
That is a superb email.
So I just played FIFA 95 quite a lot.
Oh, yeah, you middle-class people with your computer games consoles.
I played Kirby World Cup.
Kirby was textbook.
Soccer as well. Yeah. Remember Sensible Soccer?
Kick-off.
It wasn't sensible at all, was it?
Kick-off.
Soccer was called Sensible Soccer, but you could be a team named after flavours of crisp. What's sensible about that?
I think you'll find that was the custom teams. I think you'll find Sensible World Soccer was a deep and meaningful soccer management simulator.
Experience.
You'd have 25 seasons. It was great.
Think this man's more talking not of the computer.
No, yes. The games we played, Knockout Wembley. That is standard.
Knockout Wembley.
Doubles, trebles, singles.
I grew up in Scotland, so they called it Hampden Doubles.
Did they?
Yeah.
People down here sometimes call it Cuppy. Are you playing Cuppy?
Really? Well, it was actually Hampden Double sponsored by Iron Brew, I think.
Knockout, Wem, what other stuff do we use?
Seven Boys?
Warley. Warley.
Yeah. Warley. Yeah. Or Bari. Bari.
Yeah,
crossbar.
What was that one? Seven Boys. What's that?
Hang on a minute. You're just basically crossing.
Headers and volley, sort of thing.
Over the park in general was just the best thing, though. When games would be like 44-all.
Did you boys used to get it when there's loads of people, it suddenly became Ultimate Park?
Yeah.
That's what we used to call it.
20 each.
Yeah, then it got crap. You know, you couldn't knock it around, could you? But anyway, next email. Who's got it? I reckon Pete does.
Ramblers, following your last podcast when you asked, where is Francis Jeffers now? I can reveal that the formidably crap striker now plies his trade with my club, the mighty Sheffield Wednesday. That said, he is only the third choice striker.
Bloody hell. Do they play one up front?
His career strangely mirrors that of Sheffield Wednesday, once considered fairly decent, only to fall into the depths of shiteness for far too long. Thank you very much, Phil Kirby.
That's
where he is. There are occasional gaps in our knowledge. Not many, but sometimes.
Franny Jeffers-shaped holes.
Arsenal Hall of Famer Franny Jeffers. That's what he should be.
Jimbo, do you have one?
I do.
Far away, damn you.
Ahoy, ahoy, Ramblers. Weirdly. Same intro. Congrats on the big win in Birmingham. Thank you very much. Out of interest, what number do you all wear? Your mate Tim Lovejoy apparently wears 14. He claims because of Johan Cruyff, who he saw on Tinternet. Keep up the good work, Ramble Force. Oh.
Tim Lovejoy wears number 14 because he's a substitute in the game of life.
An unused substitute.
Yeah, there's nothing to do with Johan Cruyff. He shouldn't be mentioning himself and Cruyff in the same sentence.
You know, Ian McShane.
One of the most egotistical fucking wankers.
Ian McShane is the person who does the voiceover on that says, "This is Sky. You're watching Sky Sports," which makes me feel, you know, when you think back to Tim Lovejoy saying that he wishes he had an influence on the game, right? That the fictional antiques dealer Lovejoy has got more to do with the game than Tim Lovejoy,
and that's how it should be, Jim.
And that's how it is, Luke.
Yeah.
So, what number do we all wear? Well, I wear number 1.
Yeah. Well, I wore number 4 in the tournament we just had.
Number 4, Lukey Moore.
Yeah.
Bobby Moore.
I wore number 9.
Yes! PD9!
That'll be the funny stories.
I'll do one. Sunderland.
I wish you would do one.
See that joke?
Oh, that's a bit
humour off. For you.
This is one about Jean-Louis Trio, the Bordeaux president.
Yep.
Metaphorically murking Sunderland in the face.
Ooh.
Jean-Louis Trio.
Pete's going to enjoy that.
The Bordeaux president has denied that French champions have received a £13 million offer from Sunderland for Marouane Chamakh. The Moroccan forward has 1 year left on his contract and is wanted by Arsenal should Emmanuel Adebayor leave. This is what Trio's got to say about the whole thing. We never received an offer. What the fuck would he do at Sunderland? You've heard him say he'll only sign for a big English club. I don't want to insult Sunderland. Well, you do and you have. But I don't even know where they finished last season.
You've done it again.
Yeah, that's a damning indictment.
Yeah. Bloody hell.
He sounds awesome.
He sounds great. Yeah, bring him over. Christ. Yeah. I've got a story as well. From Colombia, would you believe it, right? This is tragic, but maybe a little over the top, right? A Colombian soccer player shot and killed a fan, as if like separately, for calling him lousy on Sunday.
Definitely over the top.
That's like even a harsh insult.
Days after the player's team lost a local championship, police said. Javier Flores, a midfielder for the Atletico Junior team of the Caribbean city of Barranquilla, ran from the scene of the shooting but soon turned himself into authorities. Witnesses told police Flores shot Israel Castillo with a handgun after the 27-year-old electrician called him a maleta, which in Colombian parlance describes a lousy player.
That's too much.
America.
Yeah, but this is, I mean, the obvious thing to say is...
Reducer.
But not the obvious thing I was thinking of. Oh, dear.
I love the way you're telling the whole continent to calm down. Mm. Calm down, South America. Europe cares.
You're too hot, Bolivia.
Some of you's too high. Get down from there, Bolivia.
Yeah, peace on the streets, y'all.
Who was the player who got shot after the own goal?
Andres Escobar.
I met a lad from Burnley.
Who then shot him?
No, yeah.
He's claiming it. on his Facebook page.
I met a lad from Burnley in a hostel room in Lima in Peru.
We had a lovely time.
And he reckoned...
Sounds like a song.
And he reckoned that he snorted cocaine off Andres Escobar's grave.
That is R-E-S-P-E-C-C.
That's some claim.
Yeah.
Did it just happen to be there?
Yeah, it's everywhere. It's growing on it like moss.
Yeah, yeah. That's what people are leaving is their flowers. Love Charlie and stuff. Go on then, Peter.
Okay, we move to Romania. Georgi Popescu, the famous Romania captain and Spurs defender, he's admitted to being an informer for the country's secret police during the communist era.
Bloody... I'm prompted.
Ball top of the blue.
all through sort of mid-90s, like Ceausescu, that sort of stuff. Yeah, that was me.
Pretty much, Luke. Popescu's admission comes only 3 days after he denied the allegation, calling a newspaper report that he had been an informant a big old lie. In an interview with a newspaper, however, Popescu did say that he did write 4 informative notes about teammates and other colleagues when he was playing at...
like passing around the classroom.
About teammates?
I don't think he admitted anything when he was at Spurs or anything like that.
Just in Edinburgh, he don't care about the whole thing. You don't have to worry about him.
Dean Austin's eating a sandwich.
It sounds like 4 informative notes. Is it stuff like, Justin Edinburgh, he's not very good on the ball. he's suspect at crosses.
Ian Walker takes three bottles into the shower.
That's probably true.
Stefan Freund once had a plane flight change in Russia. Yeah. You know.
But when the allegations surfaced on Monday, the 41-year-old Popescu said he had signed an agreement in 1985 promising to, and I quote, defend the national interest.
How old was he in 1985 then? He's early
20s.
Yeah.
Old enough to know better,
yeah.
Marcus.
Yeah. That's news, Marcus.
I don't think he had much choice in it, let's be honest.
It's not like, do you mind doing it? Don't think it's like that, you know?
You're going abroad, aren't you? Right, we'll come use here. You.
He did defend his actions. He said, even if I did write notes, I wrote good things. I praised those people.
Yeah. Oh, he's a lovely little capitalist.
he was writing notes about the Romanian players, wasn't he? Obviously not his Spurs
I don't
teammates.
Know what's going on, mate. I have no idea.
That is Popescu to know.
Yeah. Maybe we can get him on the show.
What a hard talk with Luke Miller.
Yeah.
We want to know the facts, yeah. Georgie. Let's waterboard Georgie Popescu. tell us what you did.
Coming up on next week's show. We gag Popescu.
Hi, I'm Gary Lineker. This is the Dean Windass Hall of Fame. Can there be such a thing?
Yes, they can, Gary.
Yes, they can, Gal. Yeah.
And there is. And we've got somebody new to go in it. May I present to you Eusebio. Yes, indeed.
Looking forward to this.
The Black Panther or the Black Pearl. Either nickname is fine. Of course, he was a former Portuguese footballer of Mozambican origin.
Being a footballer is generally a sort of prerequisite for sort of players
Barry Davis.
Entering in.
Yeah, that's true. By the way,
players.
With Gary Lineker, has anyone made a more blatant attempt to try and shoehorn his own way into our D1 That's Hall of Fame?
I know, yeah.
That's the only way he's going to get in. Well, actually, I can't say that. Maybe not.
Ian Selly holds the keys, apparently.
Exactly. If we get these on the
I reckon he'll probably talk Selly round. Yeah. I think he's probably got the stronger force of will.
And the tan.
The instructions come down from the mount with Ian Selly. And you send the telegram down in the back pocket of Jose Dominguez.
A carrier pigeon, if you will.
Yeah.
That'll be European trophy winner Ian Selly.
Yeah. Can we go? Let's go back to Eusebio Da Silva Ferreira. What a player. Mm. What a player he was. Known for his speed and power and ridiculous right foot shot.
Yeah.
Have you seen?
It's a sledgehammer.
It's outrageous.
I mean, and it's not a new ball either.
It's
one of the old ones. And it hits the goalkeeper. I've seen a couple of them. And it hits the goalkeeper. He's like, oh, that looks like it hurt.
Yeah. It's some of the old footage. I've seen where he takes a penalty. And the camera's obviously quite old because it's quite old footage. And the ball's just in the back of the net before you realise. You don't even see it get there. So what I'm saying is he can officially kick the ball faster than the speed of light. In your face, Einstein.
Yeah.
Always an advantage.
And right in the face it goes of Einstein. please cut that out, Pete.
No.
He grew up in, as I say, he's from Mozambique originally, but moved to Portugal when he was a young lad. And moved to Lisbon, in fact, in his late teens. And he began his playing career with his local club, Sporting Club Lourenco Marques. But by the age of 18, his talent had been spotted. And there was a fierce bidding war between the two Lisbon rivals, Benfica and Sporting. And it was so fierce, in fact, that he actually had to flee Lisbon for a tiny little Algarve village. And when the dust had settled, he finally signed for Benfica.
Slapping each other with dueling gloves. Go on.
Some literal tug of war, perhaps. I don't know.
But, do you think one of the clubs took like an actual Black Panther in to try and sort of. Here it is, now you can have him. We don't want him anymore. You can sign him.
Yeah, he's mauling all our other players. but he was signed for £7,500.
That wouldn't have been a sort of insignificant amount of money.
That was a fair old whack. In his second outing as a Benfica player, it was in a friendly tournament in Paris. He scored a hat trick against Santos, Brazilian side, who had a little lad called Pelé playing for him.
Wow!
Oh,
hey. So what about that?
He's proved him wrong. Sorry, I don't know what I meant by that.
Yeah, because Nicky Butt isn't the greatest player of all time.
Yeah, exactly.
So there we go. Yeah, it just had. had unbelievable success with Benfica. They most notably won the European Cup in 1962 when they beat Di Stefano's Real Madrid in the final 5-3.
Some game that is.
Yeah, and they were also European Cup runners-up 63, 65 and 68. He scored twice in that final as well when they won 5-3, so it's absolutely phenomenal. And he won... he was the first winner of the European Golden Boot Award, incidentally. In 1965, he was European Player of the Year. He won the Portuguese First Division 7 times.
It sounds like he did this on his own.
Yeah, well, pretty much. Did. 5 cup wins. It just absolutely phenomenal stuff. He just ridiculously successful there.
That sort of record, that is one of the things that, you know, sets the bar of what success is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If someone can achieve that, if that is a possible thing you can do, that's what you can aspire to. It's phenomenal.
I think with Benfica, I think in his second last season with Benfica, he scored 40 goals in 22 matches. Or something like that. I mean, that's with a cup competition and a European Cup
absolutely
competition as well.
Well, in all the league matches in Portugal... he scored 320 goals in 313 league matches.
Unbelievable.
It's just...
more than one in one.
You're basically... If Eusebio is in the team and you're playing against him, you're basically giving them a goal head start. Whatever happens.
That is crazy.
Oh, Benfica are 1.3 up.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Absolutely phenomenal. And... In the late 70s, he went to play for two minor Portuguese teams and then later went to the North American Soccer League.
Nazzle.
Thank you very much. And he played in Boston, Toronto and Las Vegas. Not massively successful there. It was kind of winding down.
Don't think that's why he was there.
No.
Practice
his English,
yeah,
perhaps.
Well, yeah.
But unfortunately, he had to retire due to his all the injuries, and I think particularly with his knees. But his international career was quite something. He was the all-time leading scorer for Portugal. He scored 41 goals in 64 matches. Until Pauleta surpassed that.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a shame. I think they should have dropped Pauleta, because to have that player with the record is not quite the same.
Well, Pauleta was one of Paris Saint-Germain's finest, Pauleta. Good player. I'm not saying he's in the same league, but, I mean, it is what it is.
And he's not in the same Hall of Fame, either.
No, he's not. And just for taking Eusebio's record away from him, he's not ever going to be either.
No.
I've ruled on that.
And you are the ruling on many things in life.
Not this, am I?
He was the leading scorer at the 1966 World Cup Finals, where he scored 9 goals.
I think that's what I remember. I mean, obviously, it's difficult.
Well, that's the footage I've seen mainly of Eusebio.
You're not realistically going to, if you're sort of our age, because how football was then, you're not really going to see him in, sort of on video week in, week out playing for his club side. I very much remember him through sort of older relatives talking about him as an international footballer.
Absolutely.
And 1966, he was, you know, probably an arguably player of the tournament there.
Yeah. So. Well, and also the 68 final when Manchester United won, you know, he played against Best and all those guys. Yeah.
Because Portugal got to the semis in 66, didn't they?
They did, yeah. And they got knocked out by England. He scored the Portugal goal. He also scored 4 against Korea as they were there.
That's the one with the penalty. Where he bullets the ball in. It was one of them as a penalty, wasn't it? That's what I was talking about.
If anybody can see that footage of Portugal versus Korea in the 66 World Cup, you are right, Luke. It's just a thunderous shot.
You think it's ridiculous. The same way? He bends down to pull his sock up.
Yeah, that's right.
Takes about 2 steps.
Top corner.
And actually, the football almost, in the words of Jamie Redknapp, literally explodes off his foot.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a funny one. He's got set a record that if he scored the most penalties scored in... not including penalty shootouts. He scored 4 penalties in that tournament. But in that game again, Korea, they were 3-0 down, Portugal, and the footage, Eusebio just sort of goes, "No, I think we're going to go through here." And he just, they win 5-3, and say he scores 4. It's just sensational.
You know,
it is Roy of the Rovers stuff.
When you say that he scored 4 penalties in that tournament, it just makes me think that, like, because the sort of.
They were from Portugal's box as well.
Yeah. Because the gap between the teams were decent back then, teams that weren't, he must have got fouled so much.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hence the 4 penalties.
Well, again, yeah, absolutely.
A foul was a foul back then.
You had to go to get a penalty.
The penalty against Korea, he gets butchered about 3 times.
Yeah, it's shocking. Yeah. It's absolutely. Have you seen it, Pete? It's shocking.
And I think in that competition, I think I've seen 3 or 4 goals from him, and they're all from the right coming in.
Yes.
Just to make the most of the angle and the power. Yeah. To take the keeper's face off. It's wonderful. you never see him score like with his left or running towards the goal like
he
head on.
He melts the keeper. But the penalty is like, you know that Massing, Fowler and Caniggia in the World Cup 90.
Yeah.
It's worse than that. Like three times. It's like that times 100.
Yeah, it's outrageous. It's like a TKO. Do you
yeah,
know
it really
I mean?
Is. Wow. One of them's waist high.
It's absolutely incredible. But the English were so impressed by Eusebio's performances that they signed him.
No, they Portuguese did it, why
yeah.
not?
yeah.
Former colony.
Political.
That he was immediately added to Madame Tussauds.
That is so brilliantly quaint.
That's what
isn't
he wanted.
Isn't it just? Isn't it just?
Oh, well, finally relaxed.
It's not quite the Dean Windass Hall of Fame, but yeah. But it's certainly up there. But he never played at another World Cup finals tournament, unfortunately.
Well, he certainly set the world on fire in that tournament.
Well, absolutely he did. And he is regarded as the greatest ever Portuguese player. And there's a bronze statue of the Black Panther in a proud place outside Benfica's Estádio da Luz, or Stadium of Light, of course. Yeah.
Can't stop making statues of them, can they?
No. Why bloody not?
Exactly. So,
and it reminds me, I brought one in.
That's me.
I'd love to see the Dean Windass Hall of Fame, sort of Madame Tussauds, our efforts at sort of making waxwork models.
We should do it. We should do it.
I mean, Matt Letizia would probably be quite accurate. Yeah.
Barry Davies made a blue tack.
Yeah. It's what he would have wanted.
Yeah. But Eusebio is regarded as the greatest ever Portuguese footballer. Incidentally, he got named Portugal's greatest ever player of the last 50 years.
Of course he did.
Who, surely, of all time... What happened before? 51 years ago, was there a better player?
Yeah. No, absolutely. And to be fair to Portugal, they've had some all right players down the years. So, I mean, especially recently.
Yeah, with Luis Figo is obvious example. Who's in the Hall of Fame as well.
He is, yeah.
He's got someone to talk to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Some fellow that's just gone to Real Madrid. There. Actually, Eusebio was there, wasn't he, at that debacle?
Was he?
He was, yeah.
Eusebio is very active in football still.
Oh, massively, yeah.
He's quite big on the old in the international sort of setup as well.
I think so. I think he is, yeah. But like I said at the beginning of the profile, that it really can't be understated that he was. Yes, of course he played under the banner of Portugal, but he really was the first African superstar in the game. He really was, and he's coming into the Dean Windass Hall of Fame.
Welcome.
Come on, Eusebio. Come on in.
In you come, son.
Obrigado.
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 That is the end of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch with us, the email address is podcast@thefootballramble.com. We have a myspace.com/footballramble. We have a group on Facebook, and Luke is operating the Twitter machine. And our website will be all singing and all dancing very, very soon, and which is, of course, thefootballramble.com.
It's not going to dance, but it's going to be good.
Well, it'll dance for me. That leaves me to say goodbye, James or Jim.
Bye, everyone.
Goodbye, Pete.
See you later.
Goodbye, Lukey.
Later.
We're all off to write some notes about Pete for the Romanian government.
I sleep in the bath.
I can't see us being in a job by Christmas.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.